This is the word of the Lord from Psalm 139, beginning at verse 1. Psalm 139, to the choir master, upon the stage. O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know when I sit down and when I rise up. You discern my thoughts from afar. You search out my path and my lying down, and are acquainted with all my ways. Even before a word is on my tongue, behold, O Lord, you know it altogether. You hem me in, behind and before, and lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high. I cannot attain it. Where shall I go from your spirit? Or where shall I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, you are there. And if I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me, and your right hand shall hold me. If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me, and the light about me be night, even the darkness is not dark to you. The night is bright as a day, for darkness is as light with you. For you formed me, for you formed my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works. My soul knows it very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in secret, intricately woven in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed substance. In your book were written, every one of them, the days that were formed for me, when as yet there was none of them. How precious to me are your thoughts, O God. How vast is the sum of them. If I would count them, they are more than the sand. I awake, and I am still with you. Oh, that you would slay the wicked, O God. O men of blood, depart from me. They speak against you with malicious intent. Their enemies take your name in vain. Do I not hate those who hate you, O Lord? And do I not loathe those who rise up against you? I hate them with complete hatred. I count them my enemies. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me, and know my thoughts. And see if there be any grievous way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. Thus ends the reading of the word. The grass withers, and the flower fades, but the word of our God will stand forever. Thank you, John.
Things as we begin this morning. If you are here expecting Bill, I'm not Bill. So right out of the get go, we want to make sure you're clear on that. I feel kind of selfish because Bill is doing summer in the Psalms, and he said he picked a psalm, and I got to pick my favorite psalm. I just absolutely love the psalm for many reasons. And it is probably at least a four-part series to properly dive into the psalm. It's very deep treading, and I'm going to try to get through the whole thing today, so you can pray for me, and we'll pray in just a moment. The other thing is, I have this psalm in my mind in the New American Standard version of the Bible. There's not a right or a wrong version of the Bible. Well, there are some that are wrong. Let's get that on the table, okay? We'll get into that. So this is the English Standard version, which you have in front of you, and which John read. But there's just something about some of the language in the New American Standard that I especially like. It's like what I learned in Solomon. So you're going to see those words on the screen. If there's some confusion, I'm sorry for that. But they're basically the same, right? So I think we should go to prayer and pray that God will open our eyes and our minds to understand him better in light of his text this morning. Lord, we thank you. We thank you that you are the author of this psalm, that you moved David to pen these words to the praise. praise of your glory. And as we gather, there is nothing that I can add that would enhance, that would be stronger than your word. And yet you call us to proclaim and to unfold your word. And so would you be the author at this time, please? Spirit of God, would you work and move and direct me and direct us so that we would hear and understand all the more the truths of who you are through this passage this morning. And we ask this in Jesus' name. Amen. So we are in the Psalms for the summer. Psalm 139, preaching Christ through the Psalms. And as we begin this morning, I'm just curious if you've ever really stopped and truly meditated on the scope of God. Just really allowed yourself to, in the quiet, doesn't matter where you are, you just sat and thought through. Have you ever really let your mind contemplate the eternal God of the heavens and earth and how big and vast He is? I had an opportunity years ago. I was actually serving as an intern in a church, and I was sitting at this metal desk in a very nondescript part of the church. It wasn't like I was out in some field or on a mountaintop or at the ocean. And I just leaned back, and I don't remember the context or the circumstances or why, but I did exactly what I just said. I just started thinking about how big God is. And I let myself just think on that, meditate on it, dwell on that. And for this split second, He gave me a glimpse of the scope. It was awesome. I mean, and it bolted me because it was so fearful. It was just amazing. And I'm so thankful for that little glimpse because, you know, we hear the words and we understand God is big. But how big is God? How big is God? It's the reality of the scope or size of God and His enormity and yet His intimacy that David meditates on as he pens the words of Psalm 139. It's not just how big He is. There are some really big, heady words, theological words that are used to describe the attributes of God, right? Those, the three of those, David's going to unfold in the psalm this morning. However, the beauty of the psalm is that David takes these most awesome, overwhelming attributes of God and he reveals them in the most intimate and personal way possible. Psalm 139 paints the picture of the omni-character of God. The omni-character of God. Now, I know there's teacher pets in here who know what omni means. So somebody share with the class. Omni? All. Omni is equal to all, right? All. So in this passage, we're going to see God is omniscient. Omniscient, which means all-knowing. He knows all. He knows everything. There's nothing that He doesn't know. Nothing escapes Him. Nothing is beyond His grasp to understand, to know. We also are going to see that He is omnipresent. He is all-present. He's everywhere, all the time. He's always, wherever you are, He's there. Right? And we're going to see that He is omnipotent. Omnipotent, right? Which means He's all-powerful. He can do whatever He wants, anytime He wants, however He wants. Nobody can stop the power of God. He's omniscient. He's omnipresent. He's omnipotent. We're going to start with omniscient. Okay? So as the psalm begins, it says, O Lord, You have searched me and known me. You know when I sit down and when I rise up. You understand my thought from afar. You scrutinize my path and my lying down and are intimately acquainted with all of my ways. Even before there is a word on my tongue, behold, O Lord, You know does this psalm reveal about the details of what he knows? As I read through that. Lord, you have searched me and known me, so he knows me. We're very personal. I said David is taking this huge concept of being omniscient, and he's applying it to the intimacy that God has with him. You know when I sit down and when I rise up. In other words, you know what he knows, what you are doing. He knows what you're doing. That's the essence of this. He knows when you sit, when you stand. He knows whatever your activity is, whatever you're in the middle of, he knows what you are doing. You understand my thought from afar. So he knows what you are thinking. He knows what you're doing. He knows what you're thinking. You scrutinize my path and my lying down. Now, you might think this is standing and sitting. It's not. My path. What's my path? Where I'm going. He knows where I am. So he knows what I'm doing. He knows what I'm thinking. He knows what I'm doing, where I'm going. He knows where you are. And you are intimately acquainted with all my ways. There is nothing that escapes him. Right? He knows everything. Even before there's a word on my tongue, behold, O Lord, you know it all. Golly, I wish he'd let me in on what I'm about to say sometimes. Did I really just say that? It'll probably happen this morning while I'm up here, right? It's like, oops. He knows. He's not surprised when you say something stupid. He knows what you're going to say before you say it. And so let's recap. What does the Lord know about you? He knows what you're doing. Where you are. What you're thinking. What you will say. He knows all. He knows everything about you intimately. So, there's nothing about you he doesn't know. So how does that make you feel? Personally, it's terrifying. He knows what you're thinking, right? Do you ever think things you shouldn't think? But just step back for a minute, and let's say the person next to you, your spouse, or your son, or your mother, or father, or a total stranger, knew exactly what you were thinking at any precise moment. Or could look and see what you did over the last week. Where you were. What words you said. That's terrifying. It is to me. I mean, I know me. I'm not a really good guy. You know, I think we put on a pretty good show, or we try to, most of us, right? What would Jesus say about our thoughts? You commit adultery when you lust. You commit murder when you hate. Right? We are guilty. And he knows it. And he's the God of the heavens and earth. He's the King of Kings. Everything was really cool. I appreciate all the songs that you picked, because something in every song is in this message. It was really cool as I'm kind of worshiping there. Wow. But he's the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, and he knows. And he's offended. He's offended by it. Right? And yet, it's transforming. It's terrifying, but it's also transforming. Transforming. How is it transforming? Well, we're preaching Jesus in the Psalms, right? So let me ask you a question. How does he show up here? How does Jesus show up here? We sang about it. What did Jesus do on the cross? What did he accomplish on the cross? Paid it all. Jesus paid it all, didn't he? He paid it all. He made him, God made him, who knew no sin, to be sin on our behalf, so that we might become the righteousness of God in him. Jesus became sin. The sky went dark for 3 hours when Jesus hung on the cross. Does that ever strike you as odd? Why is that there? Jesus is the light of the world. He hung there for 3 hours, the sin of the world, and the light went out. And the wrath of God was poured out on him. Because he became my sin and your sin and every human being's sin. Hanging on that cross, he became sin for us so that we could walk away with his righteousness. Now, what condition were you in at the time he saved you? What condition were you in? Ooh, I'm good. Here, pick me, pick me. We sang about this. This was in our song. Even when you were dead, when you were dead in your transgressions, not mostly dead, dead. Do corpses make choices? And we were so dead we didn't have a pulse. He made us alive together with Christ. Right? We were dead. And yet, God demonstrates his love toward us. And that while we were yet sinners, hostile, angry, rebellious, antagonistic, no desire for him, you may have been a good person by world standards, but guess what? No. Dirty. Our most righteous deeds are filthy rags, right? He died for us in that condition. He demonstrates his love for us, and that while we're in that spot, he died for us, sinners. It's important to recognize that God's love for us is not just while we were in sin, but because we were in sin. That was his purpose, was to redeem us. And so this God that knows everything about us, David rejoices in this God of intimacy while knowing every detail of his life. How was David? He was a pretty good guy, wasn't he? There was that one little episode. More than one, but one we have in great detail, where I can pin violation of 9 of the 10 commandments on him, and I'm pretty sure he didn't keep the Sabbath holy as well. Okay, I'm pretty sure at that time. He coveted, he lied, he lusted, he committed adultery, murder, didn't honor his father and mother. I mean, you go down the list. The most horrific human failure recorded is recorded of a man after God's own heart. And David knows that God knows that intimacy. He knows everything about him. Right? And look what he says. You have closed me behind him before. Like, what's that mean? Well, to enclose. It means to bind up. It means to confine. It means to secure. Now, this is not a stretch. This is exactly what I believe this means. You embrace me. You secure me. You hold me fast. You bind me up. As broken as I am, and you know how broken I am, that's your relationship with me, oh God. And you lay your hand upon me. You lay your hand upon me. Michael, it's okay. It's okay. Right? I know you. It's okay. God is intimate with us. As broken as we are, Jesus died for that brokenness, and he is that intimate with us. Put it in the picture of God and his relationship with us, and his love for us, even knowing all about us. Unbelievable. That's transforming. That's a game changer. Right? That should leave us with David saying, such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It's too high. I cannot attain to it. I can't get my brain around that. He's on mission. All knowing. And now we're going to move on. David then moves to the next aspect of God, his omnipresence. Now, all present, to be honest with you, technically, if God is all-knowing, if he knows all, then he must be everywhere, right? So it's kind of a redundancy.
kind of redundancy, because if he knows what I'm thinking, or where I am, or where I'm going, that means he's there. But his omnipresence is a standalone attribute and holds great significance. And so David says, where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, behold, you are there. If I take the wings of the dawn, if I dwell in the remotest part of the sea, even there your hand will lead me and your right hand will lay hold of me. If I say, surely the darkness will overwhelm me and the light around me will be night, even the darkness is not dark to you and the night is as bright as the day. Darkness and light are alike to you. Just look at, for a moment, at all the places God inhabits in our world. Look at the places he inhabits. Where can I go from your spirit, or where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, behold, you are there. He's talking here about the spiritual realm. I mean, you ever been to heaven? Do we know where it is? Can we look at a map? Can we Google Sky it or something? Or Google what? Have we ever been to Sheol? No, God is the God of both heaven and hell. Now think about that for a moment. He's the God of heaven and hell. He reigns supreme everywhere. Now, when I was a brash young man who could care less about God, I was one of those who said, well, I'd rather be in hell with my friends partying, you know, right? That's where they're going to be. No. No, 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 no. The devil doesn't rule hell, by the way. He's there in anguish because he's been judged. It's a place of weeping and gnashing of teeth because God rules over the unjust who don't humble themselves in his presence. In fact, I think this might be a Politica heresy. It's kind of my own thoughts on this, so you can quote me on it, but probably extra biblical. I think it's the presence of God. I think hell is the presence of God for somebody who is without him. How fearful to fall in the hands of an angry God. The God of righteousness, if I do not humble myself and acknowledge him as such, terrified. Terrified. The wrath of God is upon those who die apart from Christ. But the point is, God's there. Heaven, hell, he's there, right? If I take the wings of the dawn, if I dwell in the remotest part of the sea, what does that mean? What's the wings of the dawn mean? Wherever the sun rises on me, wherever I am. The wings of the dawn. As the dawn rises, I'm on land, I'm somewhere, no matter where I am. And even in the midst of the sea. You ever been out on an ocean where you cannot see land in any direction? You're in this little bobber. Nowhere. This is a little creepy, a little frightening. I'm just saying. In fact, I get that way even when I'm snorkeling. If I get too far from shore, I'm like, okay, something big could come eat me right now. I mean, it's a little scary, right? He's there. Land, sea, he's there. Even there, your hand will lead me. And your right hand will lay hold of me. Again, that intimate picture of God holding your hand and leading you, right? And catching you when you stumble with a strong right hand. The hands of God are upon you. That was another one of our songs. That's cool. Right? Picture of God's intimacy, the physical touch of God in our lives. If I say, surely the darkness will overwhelm me, and the light around me will be night, even the darkness is not dark to you, and the night is as bright as the day. Darkness and light are alike to you. God is with you in the day and the night. And so God is with you when you are overwhelmed. God is not just present in space. It's not like, okay, God is here with me in this room. He's here in time. He's there all the time. And he's here in every circumstance. And so we don't need to be overwhelmed. We don't need to be fearful of thumps in the night, right? Because he's with us. There is not a place, there is not a situation, there is not a time in which God is absent from you. He's always there. We see Jesus here. Didn't Jesus tell us that this is true of him? And love, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. By the way, Jesus is God, just in case you missed that mountain, right? So when we say God, we say Jesus. Jesus is with us always, even to the end of the age. And so we've seen this intimate picture of God's omniscience, his all-knowing with regard to David. We've seen the picture of his omnipresence. He's ever with David, right? By the way, I'll say David and you, and I'll say me, and it's all synonymous, okay? I'm going to get my metaphors, or not metaphors, my personal pronouns. English major here? Personal pronouns, I get them all mixed up. But lastly, God is omnipotent. He's omnipotent or all-powerful. For you formed my inward parts, you wove me in my mother's womb. I will give thanks to you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works, and my soul knows it very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in secret and skillfully wrought in the depths of the earth. Your eyes have seen my unformed substance, and in your book were all written the days that were ordained for me, when as yet there was not one of them. What does that have to do with God being on the earth? What greater power can you think of in the universe than the power to create? Can you think of anything greater than that? I mean, from nothing, God created the heavens and the earth, right? He spoke it into existence, ex nihilo. He just spoke it and it became. From nothing, something. No big bang. The big bang was God just saying, boom, create, exist. And so we take that concept, you say, but wait, that's not the picture here. No. Here, David again intimately personalizes this incredibly awesome attribute of God's omnipotence, that he created David. It's intimate, and yet it's no less powerful, is it? For you formed my inward parts, you wove me in my mother's womb. Again, we have that picture of God and his hands intimately involved in our lives. We saw that David was reflecting that. I've got to see where I am. I lost my notes. It's kind of weird having your notes up there. David reflects on God's intimate care for us. Within each attribute, he references God's touch. That's what I meant to say. We saw that God laid his hand on us in verse 5. That his hand led us and his right hand lay hold of us in verse 10. And here, though not specifically referenced, it is his hands that are weaving us together. He's fashioning us. He's knitting us together in our mother's womb. David goes on. He says, I will give thanks to you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works, and my soul knows it very well. God's creative power is a wonder. And it's not a wonder. No, I wonder. No. It's astonishment. It's marvel. It's a miracle. Those are the words that you look up in Webster, and it says wonder. David is acknowledging this incredible miracle of creation of himself. And David is in awe at how wonderfully he was made, uniquely he was made. Is Jesus here? Is Jesus in the creation of David and you and me? Well, he is part of the creation story, and as I already referenced, he is God, so somewhere he shows up. And he was part of the original creation story that we see back in Genesis 1. In John 1, it references this. It says, in the beginning, the Word was the Word, that's Jesus, and the Word, Jesus, was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through him. And apart from him, nothing came into being that has come into being. And so, is Jesus in this psalm? Well, is he part of God's intimate creation of you? Apart from him, nothing came into being that has come into being. Yes. He's intimately part of your creation, my creation, David's creation. David continues. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in secret and skillfully wrought in the depths of the earth. Your eyes have seen my unformed substance. I want you to think about that for a minute. He has seen us before we were even conceived. When does life begin? Your eyes have seen my unformed substance. God has known you from before you were conceived. There is no mistake with God. Now, there are horrific circumstances. I'm going to do a little, a political statement here. There are horrific circumstances surrounding some conceptions, aren't there? There's abuse, and there's incest, and there's terrible things that happen. Doesn't take God by surprise. Conception, God knew. God knew before that child was conceived. He saw their unformed substance. Every life is vital. Every life is precious. Every life. Whether it's going to be born with abnormalities that we can conveniently tell ahead of time and abort. Precious lives. How many of you know somebody or related to somebody, had somebody in your life that was born with a challenge? Mental, physical, right? You love them? Are they valuable people? Absolutely. God is the creator. He created and he knew before conception every single child born and those that were aborted. He knew. There are no mistakes with God. Not only did he pre-know you, but in your book, were all written. The days that were ordained for me, when as yet there was one of them. Right? He knows. He knows your last breath. There's no surprise. There's no mistake. When your son, your husband, your brother suddenly died, God knows. You know, nobody's getting out of here alive. I'm just, kind of spoiler alert there, right? It's going to happen to each and every one of us. And you know what? When I've had the privilege of officiating a funeral, you know what? I just say we've just realized God's purpose for this person's life. We now know the end of their story. Right? He knew. He knew the last breath. He knew the last heartbeat. Before the beginning of your story, God knew you. And before the beginning of your story, God knew the end of your story. Wow, that's powerful. That's a powerful God who knows that much about you. He makes no mistakes. There are no surprises. He knows all. Said that. And so God is omniscient. God is omnipresent. God is omnipotent. He's all-knowing, he's ever-present, and he's all-powerful. Where does that leave David? David says, "How precious also are your thoughts to me, O God. How vast is the sum of them. If I could count them, they would outnumber the sand. When I awake, I am still with you." He celebrates the reality of God. And there's so many thoughts that he has about God, he can't even count them. He's overwhelmed by his thoughts of God. And as it reflects on his intimate awesomeness, right? And then there's this strange twist or change in his reflections. I don't know if we're reading along there and it's like, wow, God, wow. And then all of a sudden he says, "Oh, that you would slay the wicked, O God. Depart from me, therefore, men of bloodshed. For they speak against you wickedly, and your enemies take your name in vain. Do I not hate those who hate you, O Lord? And do I not loathe those who rise up against you? I hate them with the utmost hatred. They have become my enemies. What just happened? What just happened? David is sitting there thinking about the incredible attributes of God. And David brings to mind that there are those who hate God. There are people who hate God. Now, they might not overtly hate God, but they hate God by not acknowledging God. The God who intimately fashioned them, who knows every detail of their lives, knows where they are. He handholds us. He pats us on the back. He embraces us. He loves us. And they hate him. And he gets ticked off. That's what happens right there. He gets PO'd. And I would say that people who hate this, the people who hate this awesome God, this infinite, intimate, caring God, infuriates David, and he gets righteously indignant toward them. Right? I think that's fair to get righteously. Do you ever feel that way? Do you ever get mad at some of the stuff you hear, the abuse of man on man and slaughter of unborn children and the debauchery that we live in the middle of and everybody wagging their finger and blaming God for everything bad in the world when the reality is they don't look in the mirror? I mean, come on! It ticks me off just a little bit sometimes. Does it ever do that for you? Yeah, it should. I mean, I do that. I get mad. However, then suddenly, David stops. It's like he catches himself. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Does that sound familiar? Look at verse 1. O Lord, you have searched me, and you know me. And now at the end, he says the same thing. He says, search me and know me. Well, guess what, David? He does, and that's the point. You know my heart. I'm railing on these wicked people, and you know how wicked I am. No coincidence here, you think? Look at us. Lord, you have searched me, you know me. Lord, search me, know me. The point is, God already knows David. And David beseeches God to continually examine him. Lord, search me. Know me, to employ all his omni-character and to lead him in the everlasting way. That's his prayer at the end. So what does this possibly have to do with us as we seek to invite friends to grow in faith with us as God's community of grace? What does it possibly have to do with that? I mean, that's what we want to be doing, right? We want to be bringing other people along as we seek to live in community, a community of grace. And we seek to grow in our faith and our understanding, our trust of God. So what does this have to do with it? You thought Bill wasn't here, and you get away without seeing the slide, didn't you? Huh? No. This is just the reality. This is exactly what we just saw. Even knowing every broken piece of us, knowing how we have thrown it in God's face, how we continue to. Your prayer of confession, Thomas, right? If we deny that we're sinners, we make God out to be a liar. He knows our hearts. Confess it. But praise be to God, he's already forgiven it. Already forgiven it. Our salvation is complete. Because even knowing all about us, knowing how broken we are, God wrapped his arms around us. He led us by the hand by taking his son to the cross so that he would die in our place. Our salvation is complete. And so that leads us to service, right? That leads us to service. What is service? Worship, walk. Declare that God. And we can be open about our own failures, right? We want to walk humbly with him. We want to walk in a manner worthy of our calling. But when we stumble, we don't cover it up and pretend like it didn't happen, right? That's our witness. Own your stuff. Own your stuff. And so we invite friends to grow with us as God's community of grace. And to that end, let's pray. Lord, we do thank you. We thank you that as intimate and awesome as you are, you work with us, you use us, you accomplish your purposes through us, you have purposes for us. We desperately need you to do that work in our lives. We desperately need you to continue to refine us. But Lord, help us to remember how intimately you are acquainted with us. Help us to remember that you're always with us in our fearful times, in our anxious thoughts. Lord, direct us. Walk with us. Lead us by your hand and catch us with your strong right hand.